It was the last day of term. The school had broken up, and William was making his slow and gloomy way homeward. The prospect of holiday coaching loomed ominously ahead. "It would do William all the good in the world," said the headmaster enthusiastically. "Nothing like individual coaching, nothing at all." William's father was impressed. He saw a peaceful period during which William, daily occupied with his hour of coaching and its complement of homework, would lack both time and spirit to spread around him that devastation that usually marked the weeks of the holiday. He thanked the headmaster profusely and said that he would let him know definitely later on. "In the holidays," William exclaimed on being confronted with the suggestion by his father, "in the holidays there's laws against it. I'm sure there's laws against it. I've never heard of anyone having lessons in the holidays. Not anyone. I bet even slaves didn't have lessons in the holidays. I bet if they knew about it in Parliament, there'd be an inquest about it. Besides, I shall only get ill with overworking and get brain fever, same as they do in books. And then you'll have to pay doctor's bills. And perhaps you'll have to pay for my funeral, too. I don't see how anyone could go on working like that for months and months without ever stopping once and not get brain fever and die of it. Anyway, I think you wanted me to die. And if I did die, I shouldn't be surprised if the judge did something to you about it." His father, unmoved by this dark hint, replied coolly, "I'm quite willing to risk it." But always a fair man, he continued, "I'll make no arrangements till I've seen your report. If it's a better one than it usually is, of course you needn't have holiday coaching." But in his pocket, William now carried the worst report he had ever had. Disregarding, in common with the whole school, the headmaster's injunction to give the report to his parents without looking at it first, he had read it apprehensively in the cloakroom, and it had justified his blackest fears. He walked slowly and draggingly. His father would demand the report and at once make arrangements for the coaching. The weeks of the holidays stretched an arid desert before him. And to make things worse, an aunt of his father's, whom William had not seen for several years, was coming over for the day, and William considered that his family was always more difficult to deal with when there were visitors. Having reached the road in which his home was, he halted irresolute. His father was coming home for lunch because of the aunt. He might be at home now. The moment when the report should be demanded was, in William's opinion, a moment to be postponed as far as possible. He turned aside into a wood and wandered on aimlessly, still sunk in gloomy meditation. Suddenly, as he turned a bend in the path, he came face to face with an old lady. He was about to pass her hurriedly when she accosted him.
I'm afraid I've lost my way, little boy," she said breathlessly. I was directed to take a short cut from the station to the village, through the wood. I think I must have made a mistake."
William looked at her.
What part of the village do you want to get to?" he said curtly.
Mr. Brown's house," said the old lady. I'm expected there for lunch."
The horrible truth struck William. This was his father's aunt who was coming over for the day. He was about to give her hasty directions and turn to flee from her when he saw that she was peering at him with an expression of delighted recognition.
"Oh, but it's William," she said. "I remember you quite well. I'm your Aunt Augusta. Oh, what a good thing I happened to meet you, dear. You can take me home with you."
William was disconcerted for a moment. They were, in reality, only a very short distance from his home, but it was no part of William's plan to return home at once. He considered the matter for a minute, then said,
"All right, you can come along with me."
"Oh, thank you, my dear boy," said the old lady. "Thank you, that'll be very nice. I should quite enjoy having a little talk with you."
She discoursed brightly as William led her further and further into the heart of the wood and away from his home. She told him stories of her far-off childhood, describing in great detail her industry and obedience and love of study.
"There's no joy like the joy of duty done, dear boy," she said. "I'm sure that you know that."
"Uh-huh," said William shortly.
As they proceeded on into the wood, however, she grew silent and rather breathless.
"Oh, are we nearly there, dear boy?" she said.
They had almost reached the end of the wood, and another few minutes would have brought them out into the main road where a bus would take them to within a few yards of William's home. William still had no intention of going home. He felt sure that there was a solution, if only he could think of it. He sat down abruptly on a fallen tree and said casually,
"I'm afraid we're lost. We must have took the wrong turning. This wood goes on for miles and miles. People have sometimes been lost for days.
Oh, with no food? Said Aunt Augusta faintly.
Yes, with no food.
Aunt Augusta gave a little gasp.
Oh.
But William's heart was less stony than he liked to think.
Look here, he said. I think perhaps that path will get us out. Let's try that path.
Oh, no, I'm simply exhausted. I can't walk another step just now. Besides, it might only take us further into the heart of the wood.
Well, I'll go, said William. I'll go and see if it leads to the road.
No, you certainly mustn't. We must at all costs keep together. You'll miss your way and we shall both be lost separately. I've read of that happening in books. I forbid you going a yard without me, William. Oh, and I'm much too exhausted to walk any more, just at present.
William, who was by now tiring of the adventure, hesitated, then said vaguely,
Well, suppose I leave some sort of trail, same as they do in books.
But what can you leave a trail of?
Said Aunt Augusta. Suddenly, William's face shone, as if illuminated by a light within.
"I've got an envelope in my pocket," he said. "I'll tear that up. I mean," he added cryptically, "it's a case of life and death, isn't it?"
"Oh, well, do be careful then, dear boy," said Aunt Augusta anxiously. "Drop it every inch of the way. I hope it's something you can spare, by the way."
Oh, yes, William assured her. It's something I can spare, all right.
He took the report out of his pocket and began to tear it into tiny fragments. He walked slowly down the path, dropping the pieces and taking the precaution of tearing each piece into further fragments as he dropped it. There must be no possibility of its being rescued and put together again. Certain sentences, for instance the one that said, uniformly bad, has made no progress at all, he tore up till the paper on which they were written was almost reduced to its component elements. The path led, as William had known it would, round a corner and immediately into the main road. He returned a few minutes later, having assumed an expression of intense surprise and delight.
"It's all right," he announced. "The road's just round there."
Aunt Augusta took out a handkerchief and mopped her brow.
"Oh, I'm so glad, dear boy. Oh, so very glad. What a relief. I was just wondering how one told edible from inedible berries. We might, as you said, have been here for days. Now, let's just sit here and rest a few minutes before we go home. Is it far by the road?"
"No," said William. "There's a bus that goes all the way."
He took his seat by her on the log, trying to restrain the exuberant expansiveness of his grin. His fingers danced a dance of triumph in his empty pockets.
"I was so much relieved, dear boy," went on Aunt Augusta, "to see you coming back again. By the way, what was the paper that you tore up, dear? Nothing important, I hope?"
William had his face well under control by now.
"It was my school report," he said. "I was just taking it home when I met you."
He spoke sorrowfully, as one who has lost his dearest treasure. Aunt Augusta's face registered blank horror.
You tore up your school report?"
"I had to," said William. "I'd rather," he went on, assuming an expression of noble self-sacrifice, "I'd rather lose my school report than have you starve to death."
"But your school report, dear boy? Oh, it's dreadful to think of your sacrificing that for me. I remember so well the joy and pride of the moment when I handed my school report to my parents. I'm sure you know that moment well."
William, not knowing what else to do, heaved a deep sigh.
"Was it,"
said Aunt Augusta, still in a tone of deep concern and sympathy,
"was it a specially good one?"
"We aren't allowed to look at them," said William unctuously. "They always tell us to take them straight home to our parents without looking at them."
"Oh, of course, quite right, of course, but, oh, how disappointing for you, dear boy. You have some idea, no doubt, what sort of report it was?"
"Oh, yes," said William, "I've got some sort of an idea, all right."
And I'm sure, dear, that it was a very, very good one."
William's expression of complacent modesty was rather convincing.
I don't know," he said self-consciously.
"And that tells me that it was. I like a boy to be modest about his attainments. I don't like a boy to go out boasting of his successes in school. I'm sure you never do that, do you, dear boy?"
"Oh, no," said William, with perfect truth. "No, I never do that."
"But I'm so worried about the loss of your report. Oh, how quietly and calmly you sacrificed it. Couldn't we try to pick up the bits on our way to the road and piece them together for your dear father to see?
Yes, said William. Yes, we could try and do that. He spoke brightly, happy in the consciousness that it couldn't possibly be put together. They went slowly along the little path that led to the road. Aunt Augusta picked up the oo of poor and said, Oh, this must be a good, of course. And she picked up the X of extremely lazy and inattentive and said, This must be an excellent, of course. But even Aunt Augusta realized that it would be impossible to put together all the pieces.
I'm afraid it can't be done, dear, she said sadly. Oh, how disappointing for you. I know just what you're feeling, dear boy.
William, hoping that she didn't, hastily composed his features to their expression of complacent modesty tinged with deep disappointment, the expression of a boy who has had the misfortune to lose a magnificent school report. His father was at home and came to the front door to greet Aunt Augusta. Hello, he said. Oh, picked up William on the way. He spoke without enthusiasm. He wasn't a mercenary man, but this was his only rich, unmarried aunt, and he'd hoped that she wouldn't see too much of William on her visit. Aunt Augusta at once began to pour out a long and confused account of her adventure.
And we were completely lost, right in the heart of the wood. I was too much exhausted to go a step farther, but this dear boy went on to explore, and solely on my account, because I was nervous of our being separated, he tore up his school report to mark the trail. It was, of course, a great sacrifice for the dear boy, because he was looking forward with such pride and pleasure to watching you read it.
William gazed into the distance as if he saw neither his father nor Aunt Augusta. Only so could he retain his expression of patient suffering.
Oh, he was he?
Said Mr. Brown sardonically, but in the presence of his aunt forbore to say more. During lunch, Aunt Augusta enlarged upon the subject.
Without a word, and solely in order to allay my anxiety, he gave up what I know to be one of the proudest moments one's school days have to offer.
Was it a good report, William? Said Mrs. Brown with tactless incredulity. William turned to her an expressionless face. We aren't allowed to look at 'em, he said virtuously. He tells us to bring 'em home without looking at 'em.
Oh, but I could tell it was a good report, said Aunt Augusta.
Suddenly her face beamed.
I know. Could you write to the headmaster and ask for a duplicate?
William's face was a classic mark of horror.
Don't do that. Don't do that. I shouldn't like to give 'em so much trouble in the holidays.
Aunt Augusta put her hand caressingly on his stubbly head.
Dear boy, she said.
William escaped after lunch, but before he joined Ginger, Douglas and Henry, known to each other as the Outlaws, he went to the wood and ground firmly into the mud with his heel whatever traces of the torn report could be seen. It was tea time when he returned. Aunt Augusta had departed. His father was reading a book. William hovered uneasily for some minutes. Then Mr. Brown, without raising his eyes, said,
Funny thing, you getting lost in Croom Wood, William. I should have thought you knew every inch of it. Never been lost in it before, have you?
No, said William. And then, after a short silence, I say, Father.
Yes, said Mr. Brown.
Are you really going to write for another report?
What sort of a report actually was the one you lost? Said Mr. Brown, fixing him with a gimlet eye. Was it a very bad one?
William bore the gimlet eye rather well. We aren't allowed to look at 'em, you know, he said again, innocently. I told you we're told to bring 'em straight home without looking at 'em. Mr. Brown was silent for a minute. He wasn't a mercenary man, but he couldn't help being glad of the miraculously good impression that William had made on his only rich, unmarried aunt.
I don't believe, he said slowly, that there's the slightest atom of doubt, but I'll give you the benefit of it all the same.
William leapt exultantly down the garden and across the fields to meet the Outlaws.
They heard him singing a quarter of a mile away.